puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
What's it like to spend a day with Gordon Goldsboro, traveling across Manitoba, left, right, up and down, and diagonally? Well, we're going to find out on today's edition of Abandoned Manitoba with Gordon Goldsboro from the Manitoba Historical Society. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Bruce.
What are we talking about?
Well, 3 weeks ago, I spent an entire day exploring the country north of Riding Mountain National Park, and I thought listeners might enjoy a taste of what it's like to travel with me. So today, I'm taking everyone along to the Grand View area, where the past still lingers in the landscapes. You know, sometimes it's proudly, sometimes precariously, but there's always a story to tell.
So the question on everybody's mind is why? Why Grandview?
Well, it came about as a result of two invitations I received. One from friends in Onanole, and they wanted me to check out an abandoned building on the edge of the park. And I won't say any more about it just now, because it's going to be the subject of a future episode, but I do have to do a little research on it first. The second invitation came from a listener at Grandview, and I thought, well, then why don't I combine those two things into a single day? So I ended up in Dauphin the end of the first day, stayed overnight in a motel, and the next morning, well, I grabbed a breakfast at a drive-thru, I put my phone on the dash, and I fired up the MHS Insight app.
Ah, yes.
Of course, if people haven't checked that out yet, of course, it shows you what is around you.
The amazing various app.
That's right.
Amazing.
And I headed west on Highway 5, bound for Grandview. Now, the app, it's kind of like a digital companion, and it's like a little voice that says, hey, 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 turn here. There's something you want to check out. And that's what it did.
We should probably add that to the app, an actual voice.
That's right. Well, they're actually talking about putting in an AI component to it,
oh,
too.
Oh, you're kidding.
Which, you know, I think that could be kind of interesting, but
it's the future.
We'll have to wait and see.
And what was it suggesting?
Well, I've been in the Dauphin Grandview area many times, but it's been more than a decade since my last visit. So some of the places that have been mapped in the Insight app, well, they were photographed a long time ago. And, you know, a decade can be a long time.
Yeah.
You know, buildings that once seemed eternal can vanish. A schoolhouse that, you know, photographed in 2012, well, it might be a field of grass today.
And that's pretty significant, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, history isn't just about what survives. It's also about what disappears. And so my policy is that whenever I see a site in InSight that hasn't been checked in 5 years or more, well, I try to swing by and see what time has done to the site. And sometimes the change is dramatic. Sometimes, well, nothing has changed at all. That's why I turned south off Highway 5 about 15 kilometers west of Dauphin toward the former Mineral Creek School. It opened in 1902. It was a one-room schoolhouse initially. And then in 1926, I guess there were just so many kids in the area that they needed more room. So they added a second classroom to it. And that's kind of rare. You didn't tend to see too many two-classroom schools in rural Manitoba. But this one was for the higher grades, grades 7 through 11. So clearly there was a lot of people living in this area. But like a lot of these one-room schools or two-room schools, it closed in 1967 with the formation of the Intermountain School Division. The building, well, it's long gone. I don't know whether it was moved, if it was demolished, maybe it was simply collapsed on itself. Who knows? Maybe one of the listeners can fill me in. But what there is now at the site is a fieldstone monument marking it. And to be honest, it looked exactly as it did when I last visited in 2012. Really, nothing had changed. But I still believe in taking fresh photos. You know, even unchanged is a sort of story in itself. You know, and it documents how things do or do not change. So, okay, I got a picture. Back on Highway 5, I made another detour, this time north to the former Vista School. And again, the building was gone. Apparently, it had still been standing as recently as 2006. But by the time I visited in 2012, it was gone. And don't know what happened to it either. And it had been replaced by a stone monument. Well, jump forward 14 years, I arrive, and the scene is basically unchanged. But again, I took some photos. And then, well, that's where I finally get on my way again.
Yeah, where'd you go next?
Well, I went to Grandview. I got there about 9:30 in the morning. I parked beside a very handsome two-story red brick building on Main Street. It was the old CIBC bank branch built in 1912, you know, so it's over 100 years old. And it's, you know, the kind of building that was typical of these country banks. You know, it was intended to motivate confidence, you know, that you could leave your money there safe in the knowledge that it wouldn't be lost. You know, they had solid brick walls, they had big windows and a presence that said, this town matters. Mm. Well, so there at the bank, I met Jarrett Roback, the fellow who had invited me to come visit, and he was the building's owner. He told me that the bank had closed in 2017, like a lot of banks in rural Manitoba, and it was bought by a group from Toronto, and they planned to turn it into a cannabis dispensary because there just wasn't one in Grandview, and I guess they saw a business opportunity. But those plans, for whatever reason, fizzled. Jarrett didn't really know what happened. But unfortunately, like often happens, the maintenance stopped, the furnace failed, and as a result, of course, the building went cold, and that caused pipes to burst. And, well, you can imagine the mess that that created.
Expensive.
Well, exactly. And yet, Jarrett saw an opportunity. He then stepped in, he bought the building, and he fixed most of the problems that afflicted it. And one of the things he did, which I was really impressed with, he renovated the second floor. It had once been an apartment for the bank manager and his family, and he turned it into a three-bedroom Airbnb suite. It was great. And in fact, he said, if I'm ever in the area and I want to, you know, check in, I can happily do so. And I would. It would look like a great place to spend time. He also, of course, that was the second floor. On the main floor, he opened a takeout pizza shop for a couple of years. When I visited, though, he was on the verge of opening that cannabis dispensary. He still saw it as a business opportunity that the previous owners had envisioned. So in the course of, several hours, he gave me a full tour of the building. I got to see the vaults with these massive steel doors, you know, the kind that make you feel confident, but gave you a sense of that century-old time capsule. Afterward, we went across the street. We went to a local restaurant for lunch, and, you know, the kind of place where clearly, everyone knows everyone else, and when they see some stranger walking in, it's like, who's that? Because they just don't know who I am. Well, we had lunch, and then thanks to arrangements made by local resident Ron Penner, we visited a local seniors' home to meet 90-year-old Wayne Banting. Wayne spent his whole career as a conservation officer in northern Manitoba, and he shared all sorts of stories over the course of an hour. Stories about the wildlife he'd seen, the remote patrols that he'd made by air. And in fact, he told me he'd taken some film, some video with a camera, and I go, I'd love to see that. You know, stuff from the 1960s and 70s. Mm-hmm. He had the kind of adventures that made me wish I'd brought my recorder. And, well, next time. And after that, Jarrett and I climbed into his pickup, and we headed north.
Where were you going?
Well, ultimately, our objective was to go to the Roback family homestead. He wanted to show me what it looked like. But along the way, we stopped at several historic sites. So about 8 kilometers northeast of Grandview, we visited the former Umatilla United Church. It was a building, still standing, built in 1912, and it was used jointly by Methodist and Presbyterian congregations. But, well, like so many rural churches, it closed as the attendance declined, you know, fewer people living in the region, but also because the roads became better and it became easier, therefore, to drive to a larger church in Grandview. So it was really just the same story played out in a lot of other ways, like the schools, the little ones in the country closed when the bigger schools opened. Likewise, the small churches closed too. The church was still standing because someone, after it closed, had turned it into a granary and used it for a number of years for that, but they no longer did that, appeared. It didn't look to me like it had been used in quite a long time. And then just walked right across the road because there stood the Umatilla Community Hall. Now, when I first visited it in 2012, it was, I would say, mostly intact. The south wall looked to be sagging a little bit, but wow, that sag had progressed into a rather dramatic lean, and I would not be at all surprised if the whole structure collapses within a couple of years. You know, and it's sad. Yeah. You know, these halls were once the beating heart of rural communities. You know, they hosted dances, you know, political meetings, weddings, Christmas concerts. You know, they were the places where people gathered. They laughed, they argued, they celebrated, and, well, these things are fading away one by one, and soon this one will be gone too.
And where did you go after Umatilla?
Well, we just drove just a short distance. It was maybe a mile, a kilometer and a half or so north to the former Spruce Bluff School. Unlike the other two schools that I had visited earlier in the day where there was just a monument left, here the school was still standing. And that's always exciting for me. But it, too, showed the progress of time. Since my last visit in 2012, most of the roof had collapsed. Hmm. But you could still kind of go inside if you were a little brave. And so we did. The blackboards were still attached to the walls. You know, it was really obvious that it had once been a school. But was really, I thought, was the highlight for me is that there's a little room on the east side of the building. And there I found a chemical-resistant countertop with a sink and a gooseneck faucet. Well, unmistakable signs of a chemistry lab. And you think, a chemistry lab? You know, in a small country school? Well, it's a reminder that these one-room schools weren't as simple as we might imagine. They offered, in many cases, full high school subjects, including chemistry. And so it was really some great insight to, well, how our education system has evolved. And, you know, standing there with the wind whistling through that broken roof, you know, you could almost hear the echoes of the students who stood at that chemistry counter doing their experiments, or the scrape of the chairs in the room next door, the murmur of the students working on lessons, the smell of the chalk desk. Like, it was so evocative of, well, decades ago.
Very interesting. Where did you go after that?
Well, we made a quick stop near Holy Trinity Ukrainian Catholic Church. It's about 18 kilometers north of Grandview. And it turns out Jarrett had attended service there as a child. And even though today, well, it's not open every weekend. In fact, they only have one service every year, just, I think, basically to maintain the consecration for the building. I wanted to go around and have a look at it close up, but it was really surrounded by deep snowbanks, you know, because they didn't keep the snow plowed, because why would you? You know, so I just stayed on the road and I took a bunch of photos from a distance. But what was kind of neat was at that point, Jarrett rolled up one of his pant legs and I thought, what's he doing? And it turns out he has a tattoo on his leg of the church building. And I thought, wow.
Of the church?
Yeah, of the church building. You know, basically, it's a permanent tribute to the place that, well, one of the things that influenced him.
I guess so.
That's kind of neat. And then we walked across the road. And I remember last time I was there, there was this little building. And I thought, well, don't know what that is, so I'll just ignore it. Well, thanks to Jarrett, I now know that it was the former teacherage, you know, the teacher's residence for something called Grifton School. The school itself is long gone, but someone decided to live in the teacherage after the school was gone, and they lived there for many years. Jarrett said that it wasn't fairly recently that the place was vacated. And unfortunately now the hydro's been cut off, the windows are broken. There's even a lot of little poplar saplings that are reclaiming the yard. And, you know, it's a reminder that nature always wins in the end. It'll become forest someday soon.
Yep. What time was it at this point? Where else did you go?
Well, we're getting into the late afternoon, okay. And I'm starting to look at my watch thinking, I should be probably heading on home, but not yet. Jarrett still had one more thing to show me. We visited his family homestead and the various work that he's done there, and then we went to his little cabin in the woods. Although the word cabin hardly does it justice. You know, there was a miniature railway track that people could ride on, you know, like the one we used to have here in Winnipeg. He had two snowboard runs with lighting for night use. He had a cabin. I mean, this was not a primitive cabin by any means at all. It had a flush toilet. It had a shower. And to my absolute astonishment, he had high-speed internet that was three times faster than what I get at home here in Winnipeg. You know, he had absolute high tech, you know. And so he said, well, you know, if you want to, you know, live here for a couple of days when you're out traveling, I went, you bet. I would love to spend time here. So as the sun set, we headed back to Grandview. I switched back to my car and I began the 4-hour drive home. And, you know, I pulled into my driveway at 9:30, almost exactly 12 hours after arriving in Grandview. And I wish that every day could have been like that one. I love rural Manitoba. And thanks to Jarrett Roback, I have numerous photos to remind me of a very enjoyable day of exploration. So to share some of the visuals with our listeners, I'm going to post some of these photos on the MHS's Facebook page and on the Manitoba History Facebook group.
Long day, but you love it.
Oh, if I could have every day like that day, boy, count me in.
No city life for Gordon. So what's up for next week?
Well, we're going to stay closer to home for next week. Anyone who has driven along Portage Avenue in the St. James area, west of Polo Park, has undoubtedly noticed numerous clusters of what we might call mid-century apartment blocks, you know, built in the 1950s, 60s, maybe early 70s. And they're unlike the tall ones that tend to be built today. Most of these are just a few stories. Well, there's questions that inevitably arise for me. Why are they there? Who built them? You know, what story do they tell about Winnipeg's growth? That's our topic of conversation next week.
All right. We'll look forward to that. Thanks, Gordon.
Bye-bye for now.
Every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons ago.